From Nashville to Los Angeles, this is the Indie Bohemians.
Hey guys, Ron Placone here. You are listening to the Indie Bohemians. Got an interesting show for you today, and it's a long conversation, so I want to get straight to it. My guest this week is Minda Wilson. She is a healthcare expert and activist who has a book out now about the cures for the healthcare system in America. We have an interesting chat. We see the same problems, but when it comes to solutions, we have some different perspectives. She does not favor single payer, I do, and she favors a different approach that, I don't want to give too much away. We kind of debate a little bit in a healthy way, and I think that what she's proposing sounds very nice, and I'd love to live in a world where something like that could work, but I don't think we do. It has this libertarian-type tinge about it, and what I mean by that is it looks really cool on paper, but executed, I think it would be a disaster. And that's how I feel. I mean, it's just one of those things, like basically her solution is these micro co-ops. And anyway, I don't want to give away too much because I'd rather you hear the discussion between us, because she presents her side well. She has a lot of good numbers and good facts and figures. However, again, this is something that has never been successful, and I think for good reason. When you have a group of people deciding something like that on a micro level, they're not going to see eye to eye. What if someone wants X and someone else wants Y? But anyway, we talk about all that, and she is a very intelligent woman. She's a very sweet and genuine and kind woman, and I really enjoyed our discussion. It's discussions like these that are constructive, because it's I think it's a good thing to discuss a lot of different perspectives. I I'm not against that. It's just in my personal life thus far, I've not found a clearer glass than a single payer system as a solution to our healthcare crisis in the United States. And even after this discussion, I still feel that way. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm not, only time will tell, I guess, but nonetheless, there's a lot you can learn from this woman. Very interesting perspective. And, maybe you'll say, hey, I think she's got the right answer. Who knows? But she was a great guest. I really enjoyed talking to her. I look forward to collaborating with her more in the future. She has, she's doing some really wonderful work. And quick housekeeping, because I want to get straight to the interview. RonPlacone.com, some upcoming shows. June 5th at the Hollywood Improv. That's the Jimmy Dore show. I believe that show is sold out, but you can check out the website for tickets. June 10th, we're going to be in Chicago we'll be at the People's Summit a little bit in Chicago, Illinois. We'll also be doing a show June 10th, 2 p.m. at Zany's in Rosemont, Illinois. Unfortunately, that show is sold out. But, come hang out after. Come to the meet and greet or something, because I'd love to see you in Chicago, especially if you're going to be at the People's Summit. RonPlacone.com for all other updates. Got some more local shows in L.A. as well. Working on getting my next music show locked on the books. And the whole 30's over, you guys. The whole 30 is over. I made it. Oddly enough, as of the recording of this, I have not even celebrated yet. I woke up and I had a banana and almond butter for breakfast because it's delicious. That's one of the things I learned. In fact, I was going to do a 30 things I learned from the whole 30. I haven't gotten around to that yet, but I'm pretty sure I did learn 30 things. Cauliflower rice, great substitute. And I also learned that pasta is not underrated. There is no substitute. As of the recording of this, I have not had my shrimp scampi pasta dish that I promised myself I would make to celebrate the end of this thing, but I'm going to have it soon. That's a guarantee. But anyway, I'm glad I did the whole 30. And if you have any questions, drop me a line, RonPlacone.com or IndieBohemians@gmail.com. Want to get straight to this interview? I'm Ron Placone. You're listening to the Indie Bohemians.
Everybody's got something to my head, except for me and my luggage. Here's your Monkey Minute. I am Angie Doran for the Indie Bohemians. Elizabeth Moss is in a new movie called The Square, directed by Swede Ruben Östlund. She plays an American journalist named Anne who has a monkey roommate. Pipu, the monkey star, is a half bonobo French monkey who at some point during the movie sees Elizabeth having sex with some dude. No, not a monkey. That would just be weird. Anyway, Östlund explained, every film should have a monkey in it. Amen, my brother. That's the Monkey Minute. I am Angie Doran for the Indie Bohemians.
Hey everybody, Ron Placone here. You are listening to the Indie Bohemians, and I am joined today by Minda Wilson, a healthcare activist who wrote a book called Urgent Care, Ten Cures, for America's Ailing Healthcare System, and has an interesting perspective on the issue. We're going to discuss it. This is going to be fun. Minda, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So let's dive right into it. What are the cures in your take here for our healthcare system that I think we both agree is in crisis?
Yes. I think the big problem that we're facing is affordability.
Mm-hmm.
And given the focus of the government on creating more insurance and less healthcare, we have to look at other alternatives where we can save money in the cost of care for us. So I think the easiest thing to understand is maybe instead of people going to emergency rooms, maybe they could go to urgent care facilities. Now, we have a law now that says emergency rooms are free to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But if your kid has an ear infection and it goes and you take your kid to an emergency room, it costs $300 to treat that kid. If you take that kid to an urgent care, same procedure, same test, same exam, it costs $40. So maybe we should start thinking about rolling urgent cares into the emergency system, and that would save $78 billion a year in federal money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one example of something that we could do, which would not impact anyone and probably give greater access because urgent cares are everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm. Does that address the actual issue with, I mean, because my whole thing with health insurance is, first of all, from a moral level, I find it absolutely appalling that we've turned people's health into a profit center.
I totally agree.
And it was prohibited before Nixon. And it should, I mean, in other countries, it's unheard of. In other countries, healthcare isn't even a political issue.
Well, the truth is, in this country, health insurance is not healthcare. And
right.
I know this will blow your mind, but did you know that of the every dollar you pay for health insurance, only 10 cents or less is spent on your care?
I didn't know that, actually. But
it's like,
but yeah.
I mean, that's mind-blowing to me. So
it is.
The CDC did this study, and they used all the data from the census, and they found out 90% of the money you pay for your insurance policy goes to the insurance company to pay for insurance, the insurance company workers. Nothing, not your doctors, your healthcare, nothing.
Right.
And it's just mind-blowing to me. So that to me says there's a lot of profit in there that
mm-hmm.
you could cut out and provide the same level of care.
Mm-hmm.
Insurance doesn't need to be as expensive as it is.
Oh, absolutely not. Well, so what is your solution for that? Because, I mean, I asked you if you're a single-payer person. You said no. So where are you as far as that issue goes?
Well, I think that there's a lot of opportunities for sort of blowing up the healthcare system and providing an option. So one of them is this thing called MEWAS, which a lot of people haven't heard about. It's called Multiple Employer Welfare Associations. And what happens is the people step into the shoes of the insurance companies. So you create these very large pools. And then what happens is, however it performs, that affects what you pay. So if you're in a large pool and you invest the money and you get money on the money that you're investing waiting to pay claims, that reduces your claims. There's no profit in it.
So it's basically a co-op.
It is a co-op.
Mm-hmm.
Of sorts.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And they're perfectly legal. And we have federal legislation. And they're considered an ERISA benefit, not an insurance product.
How is this better than single payer?
Well, the
because I feel like you just like describe single payer on a more micro scale.
The problem with single payer is it only works when you have homogeneous care. If you look at single payer throughout the world, when you have a system like ours where people have different views of healthcare, different desires about how they're treated in terms of holistic or traditional or different models, single payer doesn't work because you can't be all things to all people. And if you look at every country outside the United States, there is a separate system, and more people are removing themselves from the single payer system and opting into the private pay system. So, for example, in Canada, 100% of the people in Canada have private insurance on top of their single payer system. So single payer takes care of the basics. But if you're over 65 and you need a knee replacement, that's not paid for under the single payer system. You're too old to get your knee fixed. Mm-hmm. You have to pay for that yourself.
Okay. So, like, basically, and I know in England they have a similar thing where you get the basic ground level of care, but you can opt for paying more where you get a nicer waiting room and you get, like, you know, you can bump up the line and stuff like that. I don't know all the details off the top of my head, but they have other...
Right. Well, it's not just the nicer waiting room. In England, that's another example of a single-payer system. So for basics, it works very well. But mm-hmm. let's say you have cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And you take the drug that's on the list of approved drugs for the single payer reimbursement. And let's say that doesn't work for you. If you want to take a drug that's outside that list, the government won't pay for it. You have to pay for it yourself. And in England, once you opt out of the system, you don't get to opt back in. You're done.
Okay.
So if you take that chemotherapy drug, you're now on self-pay for the rest of your life.
Okay. So even still, how is this? Because, like, the thing for me is, like, I don't envision a single-payer system that would be perfect because it's not perfect anywhere.
Right.
But, you know, you look at the World Health statistics, we are, like, pretty much the lowest of any industrialized nation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't disagree that that's a crisis. So how, like, if you just put it completely in the hands of the people, where they form these co-ops or something like that, it seems like that would succeed in cutting the for-profit insurance industry out of the equation.
Yes, there would be no more insurance companies.
And that's good. Agreed. I think we are
100%. Too bad, so sad.
Mm-hmm.
Adios.
Mm-hmm. But I guess where I'm having trouble understanding where you're coming from is how people forming these co-ops on a micro level, I don't see how it would be efficient on a federal scale.
Well, the answer is, on a federal scale, it probably wouldn't be efficient.
Okay.
So, but we're looking for health care.
Mm-hmm.
We're not looking for health insurance.
Right, right, right.
So what you really want is, it's like education. You don't want a national school. You want a local school.
Right.
You want to send your kids to a local school. You want things that benefit your kids locally. You don't want the same education for your kids as maybe someone else. That's what you want. Mm-hmm. So this allows you to create the product that you buy, and it allows you to do it in a way that you get the kind of care you want. So let's say you're a holistic kind of guy. Let's say you don't like going to doctors. You like going to a naturopath, or
mm-hmm.
you want to take vitamins, and the last thing you want to do is be given prescription medicines. So there's a MIWA for you.
Okay.
You could be part of that MIWA. And then you could have a people who are pooling their money to focus on the kind of care that you want to get.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you're a traditionalist. Let's say you want vaccinations for your kids. You want your kids to have an annual checkup. You want to take cholesterol medicine if you're old.
That's you.
Oh, apologies.
Oh, no worries.
So, if you want all that, then...
You can get it.
Can it's I turn okay. it off?
Yeah, it's fine. We're laid back here. It's not...
Hold on. I'm going to turn off my phone. Otherwise, it'll keep ringing. Sorry.
No worries.
It's my dad.
Aw, well, I hope everything's okay.
Oh, yeah, no. My dad is 93 years old.
Yeah? And he still calls to check in?
No, he works full time.
No kidding. What does he do?
He works in the box business with my brother. They sell packaging.
Wow. And he's still working?
He's still working full time. And he goes in every day.
Uh-huh.
So he's 90 years old. If you want to, you can look. For his 90th birthday, they sent a crew out to Ernest Packaging, which is the name of the company, and he did his 67 push-ups in his suit on the floor.
Wow.
Yeah, he works. He's totally with it. He runs, you know, he helps run the business, and he sells. He manages people. He's he's a work till you die kind of guy.
It keeps him going.
Yeah.
I applaud that. I don't think I can relate, though.
Yeah.
I think eventually I want to just be a culture vulture in my golden years.
Well,
and
but
just kind of like...
It's love what you do, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I think there's certain creative things that I do now that it's like, well, I'll do this unless I'm physically unable to.
Right. And, you know like, talking still to people, do this. Research.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You'll spend your life going, you know, learning about things and exploring things, talking to people who are knowledgeable. I mean, that seems to be something you're totally passionate about.
So getting back to the Miwas.
Okay.
So I could join a Miwa for me that was like holistic or something like that.
So Miwas, technically now, under the law, you have to be employed. But a self-employed person, even if you're not... Like, even if you're not a corporation, a self-employed person can join a MIWA.
Okay.
So any employed person can join a MIWA. And that's great because a lot of people have home businesses, they have part-time jobs, they have all kinds of gigs, and it means that they can get health insurance. And here's the interesting thing about MIWAs. Do you know how much it costs relative to insurance to participate in an organization like that?
I do not, because I'm just hearing about MIWAs for the first time in this interview.
So it turns out that for a basic level of care, you could pay $75 a month and be covered for all your catastrophic needs.
Okay.
$75 a month.
How has this figure been determined?
Well, because there are over a million people in these what's called Christian gifting programs, which are legal under the Affordable Care Act and under the current administration, and that's what they pay.
Okay. So, say somebody...
And if you wanted full coverage, it costs about $175 a month. That's without the insurance company in there.
Mm-hmm. That's actually still kind of relatively high.
It's relatively high, but if you think about it, it's relatively high until you're looking at where the cutoff point is for insurance for Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
Based on where the entry point is for Medicaid, it's actually not that much based on income.
Okay.
And the deductible for those programs is $500.
$500? Okay. It's a reasonable deductible. So, where have MIWAs been successful?
They haven't.
They have not. Okay.
They have not because...
And have they been tried anywhere in the world?
They have in the past. So, what happened was, in the United States...
Okay.
They actually were popular during the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And then some not-so-nice people got involved with them and sort of used them as a way to rip people off.
What would prevent that from happening again?
Well... In the 80s, they weren't regulated.
Okay.
So in the 90s, they passed they made them subject to the ERISA laws and made them subject to state regulation as well. And so now there's oversight for the MIWAs, which there wasn't before. And that's
who's
the big difference.
The overseeing?
Well, you have to report to the federal government. There's an organization, the IRS, the Department of health. I mean, you have to provide information at HHS. You have to provide information in the same way you would if you were a hospital or an insurance company. Mm-hmm. And in the states, they also have regulations for MIWAS, which you also have to comply with. There's an annual audit requirement, which there wasn't before. And you have to provide access to the money. You have to provide any money you take in. You have to have transparency about where it is and what it's doing.
So are MIWAS required to then be nonprofit organizations? Is that a requirement?
It depends on the state.
Okay.
It depends on the state.
So, I mean, what you're describing to me, my question at this point is, how is this in any way going to eventually not lead to what we already have? Because it seems like it's just a bunch of people on a micro level forming these kind of co-ops.
Because you're in the shoes of the insurance company. So let's say the insurance company makes big money today. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're a participant in the MIWA, that big money is yours.
How so? Because like it affects your rate?
That's the way they're structured. So you're the, instead of the insurance company, it's you. So you own the MIWA. So if MIWA makes money, you can either retain it and reduce healthcare costs in the future, mm-hmm. or you can use it to offset healthcare contributions in the future.
Or you can somebody,
do some of both.
Mm-hmm. Or somebody could be operating the MIWA and claiming all these administrative costs that are inflated and they're pocketing
money.
But
it's still yours. It's still private and it's still yours. And mm-hmm. and they're all subject to review. Not just review by the people who own them, but review on the federal level and review on the state level. So you don't get to go in there and say, oh, I'm the CEO of the MIWA, like you are of United Health, and say, oh, I need $250 million to live. That's not going to happen. I mean, it's amazing to me that if you look at the cost of the top five executives for United Health, if you'd have just cut it in half for what they were paid last year, every person that had a policy would have gotten $500 back. Mm-hmm. Every person,
yeah,
just cutting their hundreds of millions of dollars in.
Oh yeah, well, what the insurance companies does is absolutely appalling. I think we're 100% in agreement there.
And so here's an opportunity. You get to know. It's for you to know. It's like the Warren Buffett of, it's the Berkshire Hathaway of insurance.
So you're saying they have to be transparent.
Absolutely.
If they're not a nonprofit, what is going to enforce them to do that?
Again, you own it. So you have auditing capabilities, you have financial statements. The rules about financial transparency are both federal and state. And so they're enforced at both mm-hmm. levels. So it's not as easy to get away with something like that. You can't really pay yourself $100 million or lease a jet plane or...
But people get away with it in the United States all the time. I mean, look at organizations like Susan G. Komen. Look at, the list goes on and on. Look, the NFL was a nonprofit up until recently. I mean, that was insane. I mean, it's laughable. Like other places are laughing at us. So
I agree, but the difference is you're responsible for your own life. So if you're a member, you have the responsibility to check.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I sound like... This sounds really nice, but this also, I mean, this is sort of like, this kind of seems like a libertarian solution where, like, it sounds good on paper, but executed, I have a lot of concerns.
Right. Well, let's say you're an independent business person, okay?
I am.
And let's say you run your own business, right?
I do.
So don't you check?
Check what?
The money.
Oh, well, yeah, I do. I look at my bank account. Yeah.
Of course you do. So that same burden is on the people who participate. This is their money. It's their bank account. You don't just delegate out the window and say, oh, here, you run my healthcare for me. It's your money. You have to look. So the people who don't look, that's on them, really. You know, you can't rely on your friends to look for you. It's still your money.
So if you join a MIWOL and it focuses on the type of care you like say I want to get a checkup twice a year. I want to go to a regular doctor. I want to make sure everything's good. I want to focus on preventative care. I'm a younger guy. I'm relatively healthy. I found a MIWOL that's right for me. I'd pay $50 a month, just pulling these figures wherever. And I find out that $45 of that going every month is going to the person running the MIWOL.
Yeah, jail.
If I don't check, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Jail.
And if no one checks that,
that's on them.
That's on them. So basically, you're saying like we're better off with these like little micro co-op organizations that people self-regulate versus a single payer system that's overseen.
Because the problem with the single payer system is. Let's talk about Vermont. I don't know if you are familiar with the experiment they had in Vermont. They launched a single payer system in Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was like 2012. So they created a single payer system and they let everybody in the state participate. And after the first year, they found that in order to sustain the organization, state income taxes would have to be raised 10% of people's income in order to fund the organization, which meant that if you paid the 14% state tax maximum rate, the next year you were going to pay 24% of your income to the state of Vermont just to fund this healthcare program.
Mm-hmm.
And it was unsustainable because nobody can carve out 10% of their income and say, okay, here's money for everyone else to have healthcare.
No, some people can, but I understand what you're saying.
I'm talking about regular people.
No, I understand. I'm with you. I mean, I'm not saying that the proper homework doesn't need to be done. It does. And the resources need to be allocated properly. And, you know, that's a whole other discussion because we can go on and on and on about how grossly misallocated our resources are in this country. Whether Correct. We want to start with the fact that we spend more on defense than the next 13 countries combined, whether we want to talk about the list goes on and on, the tax cuts for the 1%, we can go on about this all day. We need a gross reallocation of resources.
Exactly.
I'm certainly with you there. And there, it would be very easy for us to try to unroll something right away and screw it up. I can't say that that's not a potential possibility. But looking at just the principles of we are already spending this money. We are already spending the money that could be reallocated. Oh, of course. Oh, we're spending it awfully. Yeah. I mean, we're spending it as the worst way possible.
Right.
Because of stuff you described. You know, when someone goes to the ER and it's free, it's not free. Everyone else pays for it. We're already spending more and getting less than pretty much every other industrialized nation. And a big reason for that is because of this kind of self-sufficiency. It's like, well, you're responsible for your own thing. You pick the best plan. You buy the plan. And then if you don't want a plan, you don't do that either. The Affordable Care Act changed that a little bit. It's gotten marginally better compared to what we had before. I would say it has. And statistics kind of support that.
I would say it's gotten marginally better for particular groups of people.
Like the middle class?
No, like the poor. Middle class people now don't have health care anymore. They can't afford it.
Hmm.
So a poor person, the Medicaid expansion has been a tremendous success. Tremendous. It's taken working poor people who had no health care. And if you look at the West Virginia study, it's given them three benefits.
Mm-hmm.
The first benefit it gave them was they earn more money because they were at work more. The second benefit it gave them was their kids were healthier. So again, they were able to they weren't passing disease back and forth.
Yeah.
So they were able to have their kids in school better. More and better. And so there was continuity there. And then the third thing was use of the emergency room, which the state subsidized, went down significantly.
Mm-hmm.
So Medicaid expansion was tremendously successful. Mm-hmm. And West Virginia is the model. So I'm not saying that it didn't have its benefits. Mm-hmm. But for a middle class person, they can no longer afford their health care anymore.
And who would be middle class? Because and I'm just asking you out of a place of, I mean, maybe we have a different definition of what that is. I mean, I think the middle class is pretty much gone. So,
well, I would say in my mind, it would be anyone from the Medicaid threshold to, depending on where you live, let's say a city like Los Angeles, somebody that makes $250,000, $300,000 a year.
That's middle class.
It is in America because okay. Because
and those people can't afford health insurance.
Think about what they're living on. If you go through the economics of what mm-hmm. it costs them to live in a place like Los Angeles, own a home, have that two car garage with a car for the husband and a car for the wife, send their kids to college.
I know rich people in Los Angeles that don't have that simply because of space, but continue.
But even so, think about what middle class means in terms of the American dream.
I have my definition. Yours is much different. If somebody earning $250,000 to $300,000 a year is middle class, then, I mean, yeah, we have different definitions on what middle class is.
But I'm talking about...
And you're saying those people can't afford health insurance.
I'm saying that those people, based on the current cost of health insurance, can't afford it. Do you know how much a health...
Somebody earning $250,000 a year mm-hmm. cannot afford health insurance, even in our messed up model.
Right.
That's what you're saying.
I'm saying that's the problem.
That's
crazy, right?
I don't think it's true. I mean, it is crazy, but I don't think it's true.
I can share an example. There's an example in the book
you can find case studies everywhere.
It's just the problem is that if you look at the after-tax dollars and what a mortgage is for a house and what the cost of a car payment is and what the cost for a regular insurance is and school and college, and if you look at saving for all that, a family plan now, if you don't get insurance through your work, is $20,000 a year for a family that lives in LA at least. And that family has a $10,000 deductible. $10,000. So when you look at that cost, just the cost of the plan plus the deductible, that's $30,000 after tax that $250,000 a year family is paying just to have an insurance policy. And the insurance company hasn't put up dollar one yet. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, we're not disagreeing that the model that we have is totally bogus, but I just think that is...
I know, I'm not saying
very
like
misrepresentational.
Poor,
oh, these poor people that make a quarter of $1 million.
Poor doctor.
Well, it sounds like that's what you're saying.
What I'm saying is it's not affordable for them. In the 50s model, you know, that where people, the Norman Rockwell family, you look at the ability to own a home ownership,
mm-hmm.
have a car, you know, have health insurance as part of that middle class dream.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people aspire to in the United States. And my only point is that middle class dream, as you pointed out, is slowly fading into the distance. And
I think it's in the distance. I mean, really, I think we have different perspectives on what's going on in the country right now. Based on your definition, I think the middle class is over. And I do think it's over in many ways.
But, you know, you can't sustain a democracy without a successful middle class.
I agree. So, I agree. You can't sustain a democracy with the media structure we have in this country. You can't sustain a democracy with a system that is as broken as ours. That's why a reality TV host is the president right now. If we're going to talk about sustaining democracy, we can go on all day about how it ain't happening here.
Well, bring back the middle class, though. And one of
I agree with you there. We have a different definition on what that means, but yeah, I completely agree with you.
So one of the ways you can do that is by making healthcare affordable for regular people.
Agreed. I just don't know if a system that failed once and has never been tried anywhere else in the world is the way to go.
Well,
I mean, it sounds nice, but I think in execution, it just would not work.
Okay, well, maybe you don't like the Miwa idea. Maybe you like the idea.
Well, I'm learning about it. I'm not saying I... You know,
I'm saying there are other options for people.
Sure.
But the real problem is you got to get the insurance company out of the middle.
Amen.
Because the insurance company is the one who's determining your care, not you. They're the one who's saying, I'll pay for this, I won't pay for that.
Agreed.
And once you do that, of that $20,000 that middle class family of four has spent on healthcare in Los Angeles, only $2,000 actually went back to them.
Yeah.
So that gives you $18,000 of wiggle room to do a lot with.
And that's why we're ranked like 37th in the world. That's why we have the resources to be the best healthcare in the world. We have the resources as far as doctors, as far as medicine, as far as advancements. I mean, we can be among the best in the world.
Of course.
Because we're the richest country in the world. But, you know, we're not because of access of healthcare.
It's not access anymore because...
It is access.
No, because it's insurance companies.
Right. Well, that affects access.
I would disagree with you there. I would say everyone has access to healthcare. You can go to an emergency room. I'd say, even though that's not the best care... At least you can go. I mean,
That's disaster care, though. That's not health care.
Correct.
I mean, this is the stuff you were saying earlier. Like health care is preventative care. Health care is going to see a doctor, or getting your heart checked, getting whatever, trying to catch something. We have disaster care because there's more money in, you know, cutting somebody open than there is in checking their heart once a year. That's the system we have that I think we both agree is very problematic. So yeah, I mean, that is access to health.
Well, I think, and again, you have to look at individual responsibility. I mean, one of the shows that I think is really interesting that's on TV is called My 600 Pound Life. Have you ever seen that?
I have not.
It's about people that weigh 600 pounds that we, the taxpayers, pay for weight loss, surgery, return to health in the millions of dollars per person in order to get that person to lose weight.
Okay.
And so what I'm saying to you is maybe when that person was 300 pounds, somebody might have said there was a problem. Somebody had to feed them between 300 and 600 pounds. There's no individual responsibility for them. We wait until they're 600 pounds and say, say, okay, now we'll take care of you. But we don't require people to say, oh, I'm 300 pounds. Maybe I should go on a diet, or maybe I should be subject to certain constraints. And the thing is, that's one of the things that the single-payer system does do. They say to you...
It lets people become 600 pounds?
It doesn't. It says, if you're going to be 600 pounds, you're out of the system.
The single payer system says that?
Yes.
That's like a line in the single payer doctrine.
They say if you are required to do certain things medically to take care of yourself. And if you don't do those things medically, then you're on your own. So that's another thing so the individual responsibility is built into the system there.
And it's built into the single payer system.
Yes, that's one of the good things.
And you're saying that's a good thing.
I'm saying it is. And I'm saying people...
So then how is single payer not better than the MIWA system?
Because what happens is it doesn't take into account relative health. It has bright line rules. So let's say 100% of men are going to get prostate cancer if they live long enough.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
Yes.
So if you have a single payer system, they say, okay, everybody over 75, we don't pay for prostate treatment. That's just it. They have a bright line rule. It doesn't say I'm 75, I'm working full time, I play tennis every weekend, I'm involved in my church, my charities, I'm a healthy person and I got prostate cancer versus I'm 75, I'm 300 pounds, I sit at home all day, I don't work, I'm not involved. They don't make the distinction between the significantly healthier person and the person who's sedentary. They just say, bright line, 75, you're done. So
that's a line in a single-payer system.
That's a line. It's all age-based rules. In England, Canada, Europe, they have bright, because you have to be able to enforce the rules. And the easiest rules to enforce are just age-based.
Age-based.
So that's the way it is. So
does that happen with Medicare here then?
It does.
It does. Yes. In what capacity?
Example, prostate cancer. If you're over 75 now and you get prostate cancer, you're on your own.
You would have to find a MEWOL that specializes in prostate cancer over 75.
People over 75 aren't allowed to participate in insurance products. They're required to have Medicare. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you work for a company,
so why wouldn't
65,
Medicare for All, which would be our version of single payer, why wouldn't that be the solution?
Because it's got the bright line rule. So now, if you're a woman and you're no more mammograms, that's on the table now. If you're too old for a mammogram, if you're over 75, so breast cancer, too bad, so sad. No mammograms. We aren't going to be for early detection anymore. We can't pay for it. If you need a hip replacement, and I forgot the age, and you're over a certain age, you could be the most active person in the world, but government's not going to pay for it. It's all bright line age related rules. It's just the way it is.
And you think that these MIWAs would solve that?
I think that, again, MIWAs are for working people. So it's people who are in their working lives.
I mean, if Medicare is so bad, why is it the most popular healthcare system in this country?
Because it's like money in minus money out. At a certain point, money into Medicare was more and they could provide a richer benefit offering. Now the tide has turned. So what's happening with Medicare is the benefits that are being offered are shrinking. I don't know if you've noticed it, but there used to be just Part A and Part B for Medicare. Now there's Part A, Part B, Part C, Part D, mm-hmm. Part F.
And yet people can't wait till they're eligible for it. I mean, it's the most popular system.
They still have insurance, though. So if you're on Medicare...
Not all the time.
If you're on Medicare, they have a supplement. They have supplemental insurance. That's the way it's turned out in the United States. So very few people are just on Part A and Part B. They just aren't. Because they want their prescription drug coverage, which is, you know, under Part D. They want to go see doctors. They want to have physical therapy. All that stuff isn't A and B.
Okay.
So they get supplemental coverage, which is an insurance policy, of which the insurance company takes the big piece and pays out very little. And every time they find a hole where benefits that older people want aren't being covered, they add a new part to Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they do.
Okay. I mean, yeah, where can people, because we're out of time here, where can people learn more about you?
They can contact me at MindaWilson.com. They can tweet me @_MindaWilson, or they can send me an email at info@MindaWilson.com.
MindaWilson.com. Well, thank you for doing this. It'll be interesting to see how all this unfolds. I think we are in full agreement on the problem. However, I think we see solutions a bit differently. But yeah. Thank you for joining me today,
Thank you
Minda.
For having me.